devaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Excuse me. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 6, Text 54. Sorry, did I? Oh, yes, I'm sorry about that. If I put it on, probably need the book now because I have the verse that I'm to do, which will be 54. Can someone get me the book, please? Yes, so I'll begin with the translation of ninth canto, sixth chapter, and that will be verse 52, translation. Sobri Muni is speaking, he's expressing his mind to himself, and he says, "In the beginning, I was alone and engaged in performing the austerities of mystic yoga. But later, because of the association of fish engaged in sex, I desired to marry. Then I became the husband of 50 wives. And in each of them, I begot..." Anybody remember how many children? Huh? Yes, 100 children. 100 sons. "And thus my family increased to 5,000 members." Big family. "By the influence of the modes of material nature, I became fallen and thought that I would be happy in married life. Thus there is no end to my material desires for enjoyment in this life and the next." Text number 53. Translation. "In this way, he passed his life in household affairs for some time, but then he became detached from material enjoyment. To renounce material association, he accepted the Vanaprastha order and went to the forest. His devoted wives followed him, for they had no shelter other than their husband." So we'll go now to the next. So we'll go now to the next verse, which is number 54. Tatra tapva tapastikshnam atma darshanam atmavan sahai vagni bir atmanam yuyoja paramatmani tatra tapva tapastikshnam atma darshanam atmavan Sahaivagnibir Atmanam. Yuyoja Paramatmani. Tatra Tapva Tapastikshnam. Atmadarshanam Atmabhan. Sahaivagnibir Atmanam. Yuyoja Paramatmani. Please chant. Tapastikshnam. Ladies, please. Tatra tapva tapastikshnam. Tatra, in the forest. Tapva, executing austerity. Tapa, the regulative principles of austerity. Tikshnam, very severely. Atmadarshanam, which helped self-realization. Atmavan, conversant with the self. Saha, with. Eva, certainly. Agnibi, fires. Atmanam, the personal self. Yuyuja, he engaged. Paramaatmani, dealing with the Supreme Soul. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. When Sovari Muni who is quite conversant with the self, went to the forest. He performed severe penances. In this way, in the fire at the time of death, he ultimately engaged himself in the service of the Supreme Personality, Godhead. Please repeat. When Sobri Muni, who was quite conversant with the self, went to the forest, he performed severe penances. In this way, in the fire at the time of death, he ultimately engaged himself in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport. At the time of death, fire burns the gross body, and if there is no more desire for material enjoyment for At the time of death, fire burns the gross body, and if there is no more desire for material enjoyment, the subtle body is also ended, and in this way a pure soul remains. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Tyaktva Deha Puna Janma Naiti, Bhagavad Gita 4.9. If one is free from the bondage of both the gross and subtle material bodies, and remains a pure soul, he returns home back to Godhead, to be engaged in the service of the Lord. Tyaktva deha puna janma naiti mameti surjanam. He goes back home, back to Godhead. Thus it appears that Sobri Muni attained that perfect stage. Oma gina timirandasya gananjana shilakaya akshua unmalitam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge, and I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. I thank you all very much for attending this talk here and on the internet, and I pray for your prayers that I may say something useful and beneficial for all of us, so that hopefully Krishna will manifest in some way, some manner, and we will all be benefited by his guidance and his instruction. So, in regard to this particular verse, let me just start out by saying it's quite obscure and quite mystical. And I know, and to be quite candid, from a material point of view, it sounds like, as it's mentioned here, that in the fire at the time of death, he ultimately engaged himself in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, normally, for a normal human being, when he dies, he just dies. We don't see any fire coming out of his body. No fire. It's just generally very, very white and very pale, and then everything stops, the rigor mortis sets in, and he's dead. So, obviously, something else, or I should say, apparently, something else is being spoken about here. And this is a mystical way of dying. And we see this in a few different examples in the Bhagavatam. For example, Sati. When Sati went to the sacrifice that what's her father's name again? Huh? Dakshin. Huh? Can I hear it loud?
Daksha.
Daksha. Yes, when her father Daksha was performing a ceremony, before she left, her husband, Lord Shiva, told her not to go. You're not wanted there. You're considered the black sheep of the family, so to speak, and because you married me. And what does that mean? Well, Lord Shiva, his associates are the goblins and the ghouls and the ghosts. So Daksha, being a big king, considered that for his daughter to associate with someone, and he doesn't even wear hardly any clothes, he just has a little loincloth. And here Daksha wears these fine garments with a crown and silk and rings and necklaces and garlands, and her daughter to marry such, I don't want her to be my daughter. That's the mentality that he had. So Lord Shiva warned her, please don't go where you're not wanted. Stay here. Stay peaceful. Stay happy. So she says, yeah, but I want to see my family. I want to see my mother and my sisters. He says, but it may not turn out to be so pleasant as you would like it to be. And also, I want to wear some of my dresses that I've never wear because you're here and I can't put on a big show for you. You just wear loincloth and I just wear a simple sari here. So I would like to dress up a little bit, put on some beautiful earrings, nose rings, and all of these things. So he said, well, if you insist, go ahead. But remember, I warned you. Anyway, she went there and she took her seat. She met her family members. She embraced them, hugged them, and they were happy to meet. But her father, he didn't even go near her. He didn't even welcome her. He couldn't care less about her. And this is a very shocking thing, a very hurtful thing to a daughter. Daughters generally bond very firmly with their, assuming that their fathers are normal, they bond very firmly with the, well, today, you know. So they bond very firmly with their fathers because, you know, women generally, their physical structure is a little inferior to men's. They're not as strong, not as muscular, usually not as tall. So they feel, with this closeness, this bonding with their father, they feel strength. And they also, the father who has confidence, who has courage, who has strength and determination, they inject that into their daughters as well. So whether the femininity or very timidity or very fearfulness that they may have as a result of some little inferiority to the male sex, that's compensated for by the feeling of protection and guidance and strength of the father. So that's, and boys tend to bond with their mothers a lot more than even with their fathers. Sometimes when little girls are growing up and they're bonding with their father, even the mother sometimes becomes, they become a little bit envious because the father is showing more love to the daughter than to the mother. So sometimes they get into little unnecessary arguments as a result of this bit of envy that kind of seeps in or seeks in. Anyway, there is that. And in the case of boys, when they're growing up, they tend to be very restless and very bullyish. If you leave a little three-year-old boy with a three-year-old girl in a room by themselves, and the girl is playing with her toys, little doll maybe, and the boy has his little kiddie car, well, he looks at the girl with the doll, and immediately he walks away from the kiddie car, and he grabs the doll and starts to hold on to it. She cries, I want my doll. She says, no, I'm going to keep it. So she comes crying to the mother, and mother comes in, why you've taken this doll? So he says, well, I want it. Yeah. So this is the boy. Not only that, but it's usually when the little girl gets the doll back and mother goes out of the room, the little boy comes in, he slaps her in the face. This is very common. And she starts crying again. Boys are very bullish, little boys. They're very tough. And the way that is dealt with, as Krishna has set this up, is that when they bond with more with their mothers, mothers tend to be more compassionate, more gentle, more sweet, more kind. They have these feelings like that. So boys absorb that. And therefore, instead of being so bullish and so fistic, instead of being so hostile, they become more balanced in their growing up, in their personalities. They know they have to be more disciplined, more restricted, and better controlled, and not just go around fighting. If they continue this fighting, of course, they end up in penitentiary or in jail or in somewhere or another. So, how did I get onto this? What did I start with? Ah, oh, yes, Dakshina's daughter. Thank you very much. At least somebody's awake here. Arthur, thank you. So yes, this is a very humiliating, very devastating, very shameful type of thing. When the daughter wants the love of her father and wants to be at least recognized, at least be said, hello, it's nice to see you. How's your husband or how's your home in the forest? Nothing. Zero. Okay, that's the first insult. Then Daksha has this ceremony performed by the Brahmins, and in the course of the ceremony, various offerings are made to the various gods. But Daksha made sure that Lord Shiva would not get any of the offerings, because he didn't even recognize Lord Shiva as a human being. He just recognized him, like, quite frankly, as a bum, as a nobody, as a good-for-nothing. A person who hangs out in crematoriums and consorts with goblins and ghouls and ghosts. I don't even want to recognize his existence. That's his mentality. So when Sati saw that, and she knew the greatness and the glory and the power of her husband, and she saw that her father, he had already insulted her, now he's insulting her husband, whom she loves so fondly, so dearly, so intensely, that how dare him? She had strong affection toward, strong emotion towards Lord Shiva. She could be very detached in other matters, very peaceful, very calm. But as we know, when a great devotee is being blasphemed or insulted or derogated, then it is the job of a Vaishnava either to leave the place or to get, or in some way, to get out of the place, or some way kill the person who's doing it, or try to reason with the person who's doing it. But don't just sit there like a jellyfish. We have to do something. So Sati felt she didn't want to get into a fist fight with her father because he was much more skilled. And not only that, but if she got really angry, she could curse him and that would be the end of him. She didn't want to do that. So what did she do? She sat down in yogic meditation. She closed her eyes and she said, I don't want to be associated with this body which came from that blasphemer. I want nothing to do with this body. I want to burn it. I want to destroy it so that I have no blasphemer. So what did she do? She sat down in yogic meditation, and there is a special mantra that one has, and one is also, these yogis, they have inner sight, inner vision, inner knowledge. Now there are different chakras that we have, you know, these Muladhara chakra, Manipura chakra. Each chakra, these are little wheels which correspond to the endocrine glands. They go up from the bottom of the spine, and then up a little higher to the genitals, and a little higher to the solar plexus, the heart, the neck, and then the Agni chakra, between the eyebrows, and then the head, the Brahmaran. So each one of these contains one of the five elements, earth. I think the earth is down the Muladhara, the first one down on the bottom. And then the next, the Manipura, earth, the water, fire, air, and ether. Now when a yogi can control, gains power over these chakras, then those elements cannot in any way affect that yogi, if he so desires. So some yogis, like Sobrimuni, obviously had control over the water chakra. And he could just stay in the water without being affected. There are some yogis who can walk in the fire and not be affected. So, and some yogis can cause the fire element, which exists, as I said, in the fire chakra, to manifest itself in flames. And this is what Sati did. Her whole body went up in flames, and there was nothing left there but a cinder. So this is one example of on a mystical level. Another person that I remember giving this example was Dhritarashtra, believe it or not. He went to the forest, and his wife came with him, Gandhari, after being urged by Vidura that, you know, get out of here and go back, try to go back home to Godhead. Start apologizing, start repenting, start praying. So anyway, he obviously did that and must have gotten some yogic control because his body also went up in flames. And that's how Dhritarashtra died. And there are some other examples, but there's no need to belabor this. The fact is it is a power. And some persons, if they gain control over those particular chakras, they can set off the fire which is responsible in the human body for metabolism and the different types of burning activities. So that's the understanding that I have. Before I go on with really the meat of today's talk, would anyone like to add anything to that specifically? Not another example, but in terms of explanation, because I'm just going out on a limb, quite frankly. This is my understanding, that it is a mystic power and that one learns it in the course of yoga. For example, when Haridas Thakur, when he died, there was no fire. He looked at Lord. He didn't want any fire. He wanted to see the beautiful face of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He had the feet of Lord Chaitanya on his heart, and he was in ecstasy. And he wanted to go out just in ecstasy, unlike Sati, who felt great anger and great rage and wanted to get out of that horrible body as far as she was concerned. And Dhritarashtra, I would presume, after reasoning and realizing the horrible things that he sanctioned in the course of his reign with his son, Duryodhana, would also want to get out of that horrible body, which was instrumental for this entire war of the Battle of Kurukshetra. Now, anybody know? Okay, so I would like to get on with today's, what I would like to emphasize today. It's very important. Most important is, what is the cause of Sobrimuni's fall down? Well, the ostensible or apparent cause is that he looked at some fish. By the way, would somebody start passing this around? This is from my book, Mystical Stories from the Bhagavatam. And my good friend Baba Sindhu, who's an incredible artist, he drew this black and white picture of Sobrimuni underwater looking at the two fish. And he did an amazing job. It's just black and white. But when you see it, it definitely bring a chuckle or two from you. Just pass it around, left side, for we can go. Make sure everybody gets a chance to see it. And you don't have to take 10 minutes meditating on it, the way Sobri is meditating on the fish. Not necessary. Okay, thank you. So anyway, important point is that the ostensible or apparent reason is he was looking at the fish, and the fish were engaged in some sexual activity. And what happened is that the desire for the same thing arose in his heart and his mind, and he wanted to enjoy material pleasure, sexual pleasure, and therefore he came out of the water and he did what we all. I'm not going to repeat all of that he got married, because we already did that. So, so that's given as the apparent cause. But Vishvanatha Chakravarti Thakur, in the 10th canto, which I'm going to read, just what he says, there's more to it than that. So we already knew from Radhanath Maharaj's wonderful class yesterday that that Sobrimuni committed a terrible offense against one of Lord Krishna's, Lord Vishnu's carrier. And to do that is horrible, because the devotees of the Lord, especially those who are close to him, who are performing such intimate service to him, are very dear to him. And when you do that, what happens is that you get the result. You get a karmic reaction. You get some serious pain and suffering that comes from that. So for years and years, Sobrimuni was sitting in the ocean, in the water, underwater. He was seeing fish. Fish were having relations all the time around him, but it never bothered him. It never disturbed him, never upset him. He was detached. His thought was probably, well, that's material life. And how fortunate I am, I don't have to do all that. Here I am, I'm just meditating and getting the peaceful bliss of immortality in contact with the Supreme Lord. Probably felt sorry for them. Felt compassion for them. So, however, once he committed this offense, the very power of restraint, and this is all important for all of us, the power that we have to restrain ourselves, to resist temptation, to push away from it, that power comes from Krishna. And if we commit enough offenses, whatever power we have been granted, it will be slowly but surely removed or withdrawn, so that we don't have that power. And it is the nature of the living entity to want to enjoy. We have come into this world to enjoy, to own property, to have everyone as our friend. That's lordship. We've come here to be lords. So to be a lord, one expects to have that enjoyment. And generally the enjoyment comes from contact with the material nature. The tongue, pleasure of the ears, pleasure of the nose, pleasure of the skin, pleasure of these more subtle aspects of false ego, mind, intelligence, wanting to be praised, wanting to be honored, wanting to feel distinction, wanting to be glorified. All of these things are another form of lordship. you walk down the street and people say, hey, there's so-and-so. Oh, there's so-and-so. And you feel great. You feel honored. Your name is in the paper or you're on TV. So often you can see, you know, when a newscaster is giving a newscast about a car accident and there are people near the newscaster, they'd like to get into the picture. And you see them going like this, you know, like so. And then when they get home or the next morning, they see their friends. Hey, did you see me on TV? I was on TV. Did you see? And millions of people were looking at me on TV. So this is, again, the madness of wanting to be a lord in even the smallest degree or even the greatest degree. You become a president or you become a senator. You become a big sports hero, an actor, Academy Awards, all of this. This is the reason we come to this world, to enjoy, separate from Krishna, independently from Krishna, to feel what it's like to be a lord. So when Sovrimuni was then bereft of the inner pleasure that he normally would have from his meditation, now that pleasure is nothing like what Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is experiencing at what we call bhakti bliss. What he got is, the bliss that he gets is a peaceful bliss. Peaceful, it's calm, you don't have any ruffles in your mind, there's some inner light, and you're reasonably happy. You don't have all the problems of the material world around you. So he was, even that is, gives a certain amount of sustenance, a certain amount of pleasure and satisfaction. But he didn't have that even. He was bereft of it. Krishna took it away from him. He was empty. Well, a car can't work on empty, and a human being can't work on empty without any pleasure. If he can't get inner pleasure, then he's got to have outer pleasure. So many different ways. Sex, of course, is one of the most intense forms of pleasure. So that's what he desired, to have that which he had been watching and looking at, which normally never affected him. So we all have to realize, all of us has a certain amount of power. We all have a certain amount of potency from our spiritual practices. We have to always be cognizant of the fact that that can be taken away from us at any time, any place, if we so desire, or even impulsively perform some offensive act to another devotee. An offensive act by our words, or even our actions, speaking enviously, putting somebody down, talking hostily. All these are means by which Krishna withdraws that wonderful power which gives us confidence and strength and determination and focus. He takes that away. And then what are we left with? Nothing. And when you have nothing, we need to enjoy, because that is our nature, to enjoy. And if we don't enjoy the right way, innermost, then we have to enjoy outermost. And outermost means, as it's shown here, sexual activity, alcohol, take drinks, cocaine, heroin, PCP, any of those drugs which make you feel you're on top of the world. Some people are so wild, so mad, they take this PCP, I've read these cases, they think that they're Superman. Yeah, the real Superman. Up, up and away. You know that guy? So, they think they're Superman. They go up on a building 30, 40 stories high. They take this PCP. He says, I can land on my feet and walk away. Yeah, well, he didn't walk away. They called the ambulance and they took him away and buried him. So, yeah, that's the madness of wanting to be a Superman, one or Supergirl. And they have Wonder Woman too, so we don't want to leave them out. So, anyway, what happens is that any type of desire to want to be lord, to want to be dictator, to want to be controller, to want to be enjoyer, so this is what happened to Sovrimuni. So what happened is that he ended up marrying 50 girls, all beautiful, having sex with all of them, and then having 100 children from each of them. Well, try to imagine. Let's imagine the household with all the. It's mentioned also in the text with all the bickering that's going on. The ladies are saying, "No, I want to be with him. No, I want to be. No, he's for me. No, he's for me. No, you stay away from him. You know, the cluttering and the clattering and the arguing that goes on in a household due to the envy which comes on. Well, he's spending too much time with you. I want to be with him and this. So he had to endure this. And what to speak of the kids? Got 100 kids from each lady, and the crying at night, the screaming, the yelling, shut up. This is a man who lived in peace, in quiet, in calmness, and he's reflecting on this. Look at my situation now. It's horrible. What am I going to do? So finally he came to the conclusion that this was foolish of me to meditate on these fish, because he feels that that's the reason why he got into this situation. But there are deeper reasons, and I want to go into those for a few minutes, because it's mentioned in the 10th canto, the 17th chapter, the 10th verse, and I'll read the translation. Seeing how the unfortunate fish in that lake had become most unhappy at the death of their leader, so Garuda had attacked the leader of the fish, what we might call today a whopper, big one, you know. So he attacked him and took him away and ate him. So Sobri uttered the following curse under the impression that he was, listen to this, mercifully acting for the benefit of the lake's residents. Purport. In this regard, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that when our so-called compassion does not tally with the order of the Supreme Lord, it merely causes a disturbance. Because Sobri had forbidden Garuda's coming to that lake. Well, this is another part of a different pastime. I'm not going to go into that part. So, the important part is that he did not have the sobriety, the calmness, the control to think, well, wait a minute. God has created the eagle, the birds, and the food for the birds are snakes and worms and fish. So that's the order of things. Just as human beings have certain food, then the order of the eagles or the birds, they eat snakes and fish. So that's the way God has set it up. Who am I to say that that bird should not eat those fish? Who am I to contradict the Supreme Lord? Am I better? Am I bigger? Am I greater? Am I grander? Am I more powerful than the Supreme Lord? This is the position he's taking. That's why it's mentioned in this purport that one's desires should tally with, or should be in complete sync with, the Supreme Lord's desires. So if the Lord didn't want Garuda to eat the fish, well, then he would have told him, don't do it. But he never forbade him to do it, therefore he had complete license, carte blanche authority. But Sobri Muni, having attachment, and I'm going to get into that right now, he was attached to the fish, he was thinking he's there like a father, he's their protector. That's his extended family. Can you imagine? It's very natural that when you're living alone for a long time, the nature of human beings is to want to have associations. If we don't have them physically, often we have them in our mind. We think of times and places when we were together with this person. I know I've been alone in long periods of time, and I remember when I was with this group and that group, and I was doing stuff. So you're really not alone. You're because we'd like to be with people. We like to be in association. There's a certain pleasure which comes from associating with others. That's why we're all together, because we like being together. And spiritual association is highly recommended in our scriptures. Lord Chaitanya gives that as one of the five most important forms of devotional service. Chanting the holy name, hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, associating with devotees, worshipping the deity, and living in a holy dham. He gives those as most five. So association. So it's natural. It's our nature. So his family, extended family, was the fish. And so he felt a protective feeling, like a father. So here's the point. I want to read this, and then I'll talk a little bit more about it.
gone far. I got a few pages mixed up here. Yes. So the next thing is that 10:17:10. Seeing how the unfortunate fish in that lake had become most unhappy at the death of their leader, Sobri uttered the following curse under the impression that he was mercifully acting for the benefit of the lake's residents. Okay, I already read that. The next translation, the curse, here it is. Now, in the ninth canto, it's never mentioned by Sobri Muni that he knows who the bird is. Garuda's name is never mentioned. But in the tenth canto, here is the way the curse comes out. If Garuda ever again enters this lake and eats the fish here, he will immediately lose his life. What I am saying is the truth. So he knows who Garuda is. He knows he is the carrier of Lord Vishnu. He knows he is a great devotee. But here's the point, purport. The Acharyas explain that because of Sobri Muni's, and here it is, material attachment and affection for a fish, he failed to see the situation from the spiritual viewpoint. The ninth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam describes his fall down for this offense. Because of, here it is, third reason. I've already mentioned two, material attachment, material affection. Third reason, because of false pride, Sobri Muni lost his power of austerity, and with it, his spiritual beauty and happiness. When Garuda came to the Yamuna, Sobri Muni thought, oh, this is very interesting. Although he may be a personal associate of the Supreme Lord, I will still curse him and even kill him if he disobeys my order. Unquote. Such an offensive attitude against an exalted Vaishnava will certainly destroy one's auspicious position in life. As the ninth canto describes, Sobri Muni married many beautiful women and suffered greatly in their association. Not just because they were women, that was not the point. It was the whole situation there. Being surrounded by so many people with so many desires, selfish desires, self-centered, self-loving desires there. He couldn't get any peace, couldn't get any quiet, couldn't get anything. The palace was just a cauldron of noise. So as the ninth canto describes, Sobri Muni married many beautiful women and suffered greatly in their association. But because he had once become glorious by taking shelter of the Yamuna River in Sri Vrindavan, he was ultimately delivered. Again, we see how powerful, how wonderful, how glorious the Yamuna River is. How sanctified, how spiritualized it is. So, in spite of his offense, by his previous immersion in the Yamuna, he was purified from one point of view. Still, he had some evil qualities in him, and pride, false pride, was the worst. So, here's the way that played out. All of the fish were his children. Garuda was attacking his children. Garuda was construed or seen to be an offender or a threat to his family. And because there was attachment, what is the feeling of attachment? How do we define it? It's the feeling that something or someone somewhere is indispensable for our happiness. When you feel, I must have this to live. But in actuality, in truth, it's not indispensable. But we think that. For example, a person is married to someone else, and the person dies and cries, I'll never live without you. At least that's when the person dies. 6 months later, the person has almost completely forgotten that person, or maybe has occasional flashes or glimpses. It means that that's completely untrue. We think in attachment that we can't live without this person, but in effect, in reality, in truth, we can. So it's a big illusion. So that's what attachment is. And Sobri Muni was attached to those fish. That's what it says right here. And he was felt strong affection for them. That's what it says here. And he also felt great material pride. Why? Well, look at his situation. Look at his situation. Nobody could do what he could do. He could live underwater. He could utter a mantra and build a big palace. He could do so many things that others can't do. And when you have the power to do things which hardly anybody else can do, it makes you feel you're great, you're wonderful, you're sublime, you're on top of it. Nobody can touch you. Nobody can get near you because you're so great. When we begin to think that, that's when the power starts getting withdrawn from us. And this is what happened. He exploded from his material attachment, from his material his pride and his material affection. He exploded at Garuda. He lost it. Instead of, now if he had been balanced, if he had been sober, what would he have done? He would have said, "My dear fish, can we have a little chat?" And then he would have sat down and said, "Well, look, I have a feeling of a great affection for these fishes, and you're going and killing them and eating them. Would it be possible for you to desist from that? That's a reasonable..." And Sri Garuda would have said, "Well, look, I think you've forgotten the real philosophy of life, that those fish have been made for my appetite." And then he would have gotten the knowledge that he needs in order to be able to continue functioning. But he didn't. And what we learn from this is that when we become attached, when we become too materially affectionate, when we become too proud, the result of that is we explode. When something doesn't appeal to us, something we feel is hurting us or threatening us, and really it's not. And the result of that is we become, we lose it, we lose our power, and we suffer as a result. So our answer to all of this is to be, what we're doing here in this wonderful temple is we're learning how to become attached to Krishna. When our attachment to Krishna and Radha, when our attachment to their great devotees becomes so strong, so intense, so overwhelming, that we have no... We may be interested, we can appreciate fish for the fact that Krishna made them, he created them, but that's it. Our attachment must go to the Supreme Lord. And reposing our love in Krishna will redound in greater and greater transcendental bliss and peace and strength and joy and happiness. But if we become attracted to, affectionate toward, attached to, proud of our power and other living entities, then what happens is that whenever they will leave us or we will leave them, we will become miserable. So the way to avoid all misery is to become filled with love for Krishna. So when we serve the Supreme Lord, we have to serve Him in such a way that we can remember Him. Krishna says, whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, do it for me. Always think of me. Become my devotee. Worship me. Offer your homage unto me. Thus you will come to me without fail. I promise you this because you are my very dear friend. So Krishna has made a promise to all of us. And if we remember the Supreme Lord lovingly, concentratedly, thankfully, gratefully, whenever we do service, and we need to program our mind to do this, it won't happen by itself. And we need to take shelter of Krishna and our spiritual master to gain that power. And when we have it, and we will eventually, just as Sobri Muni ultimately did, he went back home, back to Godhead. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada ki. Are there any comments or questions anyone would like to ask in any of this? Yes, Prabhu. I see a hand going up. Microphone, please, someone. Thank you.
Thank you, Prabhu.
Thanks nice and loud, class. Prabhu.
Yeah, just about that thing in the beginning. I was just trying to look this thing up, but I couldn't find it. I seem to recall a passage from Krishna book.
Yeah.
Where it was talking.
This is from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto.
Right.
It's in the Krishna book also, but I use the Bhagavatam.
Yeah, I think it was the chapter with the Vishnu Dwar and the Shiva Dwar. It was talking about how, like, at the end of life, one experiences a great heat or a great fire. I think Prabhupada was talking about some kind of fever, like you have a fever.
In the what, the Shiva Dwar?
Well, it was in that chapter, I think. Because he's talking about heat and cold, you know, the different effects of heat and cold.
Yeah, but that was a power. It was the use of that fire power in that incident.
But
Shivajvara had immense power of heat, mm-hmm. and he could manifest it. And it was used at the end of the world to help in the devastation of the world.
But, you know, he was talking about how, like, you know, heat and cold, you know, in the body, you know, the effects on the body of heat and cold. And he was talking about how, like, at the time of death, you know, a person experiences a fever. So I was just wondering if anybody has heard of that or if anybody knows. I can't really remember that.
Well, I don't know what you're talking about, Pramo. So, I mean, your voice kind of drifted out, and I don't know. If you have something firm and clear that I could possibly answer, I'll be more than happy to do that. I see another hand going up. Okay, this will be the last question. We're at 8:30. It's late. So let's take the last question. Yes, Prabhu, or comment.
Yes, thank you. You made it obvious that the prime reason...
A little louder, please.
You made it obvious that the prime reason out of those three that you gave was his false pride that caused him to curse Garuda. Because if he would have, even though he had material attachment, if he would have maintained his intelligence, like you said, he would have just talked with Garuda nicely and...
I can't hear what you're saying now.
If he would have just been only under the influence of material attachment and affection and spoken, but maintained his intelligence and spoken nicely to Garuda and, you know, worked it out with him in a, you know, intelligent way, then there would have been no problem. But because of false pride, in anger, he cursed him. So I thought that was a really good point you made.
What is that?
I thought it's a really good point you made.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, that's for all of us, not just him. That pertains to all of us. Get attached, get material affection, material attachment, and material pride. Somewhere along the line, there's going to be a fall. You can't help it. It's unavoidable. And Krishna makes that fall happen so that we come to our senses. It's like a wake-up call to overcome the pride by praying hard to Krishna, performing our japa, performing all these things with more appreciation, more gratitude, and more dedication. That's enough. Enjoy your prasadam. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna. Glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Thank you.